This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed. Tonight on the Evening Edition is another episode of Finding the Funny. Finding the Funny is where we'll be speaking to and speaking about people who are in this funny business of entertainment and comedy. So be it stand-up comics, writers, hosts, actors, and beyond, we'll be discussing everything from their work, their inspirations, and what decisions and relationships impacted their craft. Patrick Teo.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm really great, Ezra. How are you?
Gosh, sometimes when we do these interviews,
yeah,
there is that, you know, you get into the zone. You get into this mode, and you've done so many of these interviews as well.
Yeah, I absolutely have. And you're absolutely right. You get into a certain zone, like you call it, and it kind of takes over, you know, you have no more control.
Tonight, we'll be finding out about the man behind that voice. And he is Patrick Teo. When discussing the medium of radio, especially in this country, that name is never too far away. A signature voice, a delicious amount of low-end bass, along with that crisp diction, all of which means nothing if you don't include a strong personality.
I think what you should do is to go to your club, sit down, have a cup of tea, put your thoughts together and call us back next week.
What happened there? What happened?
I don't know.
I don't know what he's saying. I'm done.
Exactly.
Location.
And in a career that has spanned more than four decades, it has gone beyond radio.
Hey, Gato Zanal. KC is in here. Majam. Ada ba ka? Finish la balik dari London ka? Ada beli apa-apa? Oh, saya kasih piawang semua habis, ha? Itu no problem. Itu. Saya boleh kasih lagi.
He has brought his talents to stage, stints on television, and in film as well. And that's not all. He's also involved in the upcoming Netflix original series Marco Polo, while continuing to host Pick of the Pops on the weekends right here on this radio station. With the career that he's had and the many different characters and roles that he's played, I asked Patrick about this and whether he drew upon his experiences growing up in Ipoh.
1947, when I was born, I actually don't have any memories of Ipoh, of my childhood, until I was about five or six. Mm. Then my earliest memory about Ipoh was the People's Progressive Party.
Wow. That's very specific.
Yeah, very.
At least for a five-year-old.
Yes. I lived right in the middle of town in a shop house. My father operated a business downstairs and we lived upstairs. And right across the road from us was what was then known as the Ipoh Children's Playground. It was just a flat field with swings and seesaws in one corner. Mm. And this was the venue that was used for political rallies every time there was an election. And I remember that during that time, Ipoh was an opposition constituency. Perak was an opposition state. And the ruling party was the People's Progressive Party, which was the famous Srinivasagam brothers who started it. And I remember even as a 5 or 6 year old boy, I was fascinated by, the atmosphere.
It's just all of these people gathering.
My mother would not allow me to go in to the crowd, you know. But me standing at my bedroom window across the road.
With that vantage point.
And listening to what was being said, which I couldn't understand. Yeah. But I just found that so exciting. That's my first childhood memory.
And there's a buzz to it, right? Mm. I mean, it's, you know, playground by day, but
absolutely,
sort of political circus by night.
And I don't know whether you know this, but during the old days, I think I'm told they still do it. They would precede the rally speeches and stuff with a movie. And back in those days, you didn't have video or video screens or stuff. So they had they erect this big frame with a piece of white cloth, and then they would show movies from a 16 millimeter projector.
Wow.
just to get the people to come to the rally, and just at the climax of the film, they'd stop it, and then they would start the rally speeches and stuff.
They suck you in with the good
stuff.
You know, once the plot line thickens, you have to pause for a speech.
Yep.
And then maybe go back to the movie at the end.
No, they pause, they finish whatever they have to say before they resume the film.
Well, I'm just trying to think about who you're hanging out with at the time. I mean, you know, you're as you mentioned, your brother is already moved on.
When I was growing up, from the time when I was about six until the time I was in Form 2 or 3, although I was like an only child at home in a typical, not very communicative Chinese traditional family, I had a lot of friends.
Right.
I had dozens and dozens of friends. I had friends like Buck Jones. I had friends like Tarzan. I had friends like, all these characters that were at that time in the movies. The reason why that's the case is, from as far as I can remember, 5 years old upwards, my father used to drag me to a movie theater every single night of the year. It didn't matter whether
365.
Yeah, it didn't matter whether I was well, I had a cough and cold, or I had a fever, or it didn't matter. You know, it's time, let's go.
And was your dad a movie aficionado, or was it just a way to bond with you? What do you think?
Well, no, I don't think it was a way he used to bond with me, because we, unfortunately, and my dad and I were never really very close. But I suppose you're right. In his way,
right,
he thought, you know, okay, since I don't talk to them so much, when I'm going to do something that I like to do, I'll bring them along. At least they're there, you know. So,
but it's almost like you're in isolation for, you know, in your formative years, right? You know, you're looking at sort of all of these characters around you, all these figures who would somewhat spend time with you. And you found that in film, I guess you found it in movies and radio,
yeah,
perhaps?
Yeah, that's right. Like I said, I grew up alone, but with a lot of friends in my mind, you know? Yeah.
In terms of sort of your later teenage, young adult years, do you remember who or what was making a big impression on you? I mean, assuming that, you know, I guess going through high school, what was there?
During my older years, as like a teenager that time, I think one of my biggest influences was Hugh Hefner.
Of Playboy?
Yeah. Now, I think it's a joke when people tell you, when people ask you, do you read Playboy? Yeah.
Because you read Playboy for the articles.
That's what you say.
Yeah.
And everybody will say, yeah, right, okay. But I actually did. I enjoyed the pictures, of course, but one of the things that I enjoyed reading most was the Playboy Philosophy.
Right.
Which was a monthly column by Hugh Hefner. And another column that appeared every month, written by different people, was a lifestyle column, which told you about the cut of suits and how you enjoy a fine cigar, what makes a good brandy, stuff like that.
As a magazine at that time, it was you know, merging different influences of style and not just nudity
right,
per se. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And were you aware of Hugh Hefner and the impact he was making at the time, or were you sort of like just captured by these images?
I was just captured by the images of what was written in the Playboy Philosophy and also in the lifestyle articles. I mean, as you can see, it didn't leave a very lasting impression on me, but, you know.
And was Playboy readily available in Ipoh back then?
I wouldn't say they were readily available, but they were available. If you go to the corner mama stall and say, hey, mama, sua sampai ya? You know, you'd get it, yeah. I don't remember any of my contemporaries during that period of my life. I I remember that I was alone almost all the time. I lived in a world with my fantasy friends from movies, from books, from, you know, and lived an imaginary lifestyle which I culled from what I read in Playboy magazine.
And were you comfortable with it, that solitude?
Well, was I comfortable? Well, let's say I wasn't uncomfortable.
Mm.
I don't think that I was mentally scarred because of what happened. Although at a recent seminar I attended, some people insisted that I was. But no, I don't think I was. I was mentally scarred. I had a pretty normal childhood, in a sense.
Well, because, you know, you think about the profession or the career that you've had, you know, it takes a certain amount of, I don't know, social skills, soft skills, and you have it, in my opinion, in abundance. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to think of when the light switch turned
for
you.
Who told you I got social skills? I don't have.
You do, Patrick. You do. I mean, you put on this persona that you don't.
I have, in 67 years, I have never, ever been able to master the art of holding a plate of food in one hand, a glass of drink in the other, and holding a conversation and handing out calling cards at the same time.
You don't strike me as somebody who is awkward in social situations. I mean, you know how to play that game. I mean, I see you do it all the time, in fact.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, as in the same way that everybody describes Patrick Teo as this angry, mean radio DJ and whatever impression the 90s left upon you, I also see you as somebody who, you know, can play different characters. And I think that has translated into your stage work and your TV stuff. But I think as a person, I can't reconcile that you were sort of a lonely kid in that sense.
Actually, I'm not quite sure I agree with your assessment of what I can do socially. for many, many years, I have had to be socializing and interacting with a lot of people in my business and in my career. But I've always felt a sense of great insecurity when I do that. I might be able to put on an act, but up until very recent years, I've always approached all these things with a sense that I'm not really good enough, and, you know.
Even recently?
Yeah, up until.
But you've been in this business, I mean, some, you know, 40 years at least, and that insecurity still lingers on to some degree.
Yeah, it does. It does.
We hear more from Patrick Teo right after this. This is Finding the Funny, BFM 89.9. You're back with me, Ezra Zayed, and this is Finding the Funny. We're speaking with radio personality and actor Patrick Teo. To my mind, I imagine that his entry into this remarkable career on radio, one that would last for more than four decades, came out of this uncompromising determination to succeed in the world of media. As I would find out, it was really just another job. And at this point in time, what's your ambition? Is there ambition?
I'm very ashamed to say I'm a very unambitious person.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think of...
Thank you for agreeing.
No. Because, well, I share that same thing because I think, because you grow up, well, at least my generation grew up with this whole idea that by standard four, parents or adults will ask you, what would you like to be? A lawyer, doctor, engineer, etc., etc. And I would just say whatever profession just because I thought it would make me feel accepted. But yeah. I knew that I didn't have it all figured out until way, way much later. And I'm just trying to gain a sense as to whether you had
it
figured out.
But in my family, there were three of us, right? My mom, my dad, and myself. We never really talked about stuff like that. You know, like, what are you going to be after you finish?
They were very stoic parents in that sense.
So back in those days, if you finish your Form 5, if you manage to get a job in a bank as a clerk, you know, they your parents would be quite happy. You'd be set for life. You'd get a pension, whatever. And so I was never pushed.
And the folks didn't set any expectations on you?
No.
So essentially your entry into radio was somewhat, you know, circumstantial, but also by,
well, that
by
was,
your...
That was due to parental pressure, actually, in a way, because I was bumming around, you know, selling ice kacang and being chased by dogs with a bag of Grolier encyclopedias on my shoulder. And then one day, after about a year and a half, I think, my father said, "Hey, isn't it about time you try and go and look for a job that pays money?" So I said, "Okay, look for what job?" You'd be surprised to hear that one of the jobs I actually applied for and was really hoping to get was as an air steward.
Well,
I mean,
well.
I would have set some records if I had gotten the job, you know, the shortest air steward and a chat guy at that, you know. This was during the time when charter flights were the rage, and there were lots of vacancies for people to work on charter flights.
The application didn't go so well.
Oh, no, it didn't.
No.
So one day I was seated in front of my parents, and we were having, as usual, a totally quiet dinner, and we had this little brown box hanging on the wall, which was known as a rediffusion set. Rediffusion was then a very popular cable radio station. So there came on rediffusion, this announcement that there was a vacancy for, I remember this very distinctly, the name of the post, the title of the post was a program announcer grade 3.
Wow. I don't even know what that is.
I didn't either when I heard it. So, well, it sounds like it's a job. So I applied for the job and I got a letter back saying that I should come to the Rediffusion headquarters, which was then situated in Jalan Pahang opposite the General Hospital. So, yeah. I told my parents that I was going to the interview. They bought me a train ticket, and I got on a train overnight. I arrived in the KL train station, first time traveling alone, first time out of Ipoh, and feeling just totally lost, you know. But I remember this day also very clearly in my mind. I was standing in front of the KL railway station, looking totally lost. And this trishaw, do you know what a trishaw is?
Yes, I do, Patrick, yes.
Yeah, the you know, popular mode of transport.
That's right.
This trishaw puller rider came by and said, "Hey," he spoke to me in Cantonese. He said, "Hey, young man, where are you going? It's 7:30 in the morning. Why are you standing here?" I said, "Well, I'm here to attend an interview." He said, "Where?" I said, "Jalan Pahang." "Oh, that's very far away, you know." He said, "Yeah, okay. Have you had breakfast?" He said. I said, "No." "Come on, I will take you to your interview place, but first we go for breakfast."
Wow.
And he took me from the railway station, he took me to this very famous building that was recently closed down, this very famous coffee shop in Medan Pasar, where the clock tower is. At the corner of that square is a building with lots of windows. It was a very famous coffee shop at that time and for many years after that.
And he brought you there for breakfast?
Yeah. And he treated me to breakfast. And then he took me to Rediffusion.
And that was it?
And never I paid him for the trip to Rediffusion. I think it was $4. That time we had dollars, not ringgit.
Yeah.
$4 or something. And
Can you imagine just that character not being there when you arrived in KL, where your future might have led you? I mean, just that very simple act of bringing you out to breakfast, I'll bring you to your interview, see you later.
Yeah. I remember that I was, I mean, back in those days, you don't think that, oh, this guy's going to, you know, take you somewhere and rob you. Or,
well, that's the thing, because the way you described it was, yeah, it's so idyllic, right?
Yeah.
You arrive in the big city, yeah, a friendly neighbor lends,
yeah,
you a hand.
Yeah. It wouldn't happen today. You would warn your kids that if anybody told you or made you such an offer, you are to refuse. But back in those days, like you say, it's a different era, different time, different, you know, so many things. Yeah. You know.
You're listening to Finding the Funny with Patrick Tew. We're discussing everything from his craft, his interactions, decisions, and relationships that might have impacted his work. Stay tuned to the evening edition, BFM 89.9. You're back with me, Ezra Zide, and this is Finding the Funny. Tonight, my guest is Patrick Tew, radio personality, actor of film and stage, entrepreneur, author, the list just goes on. Now, throughout his career, he's had his fair share of run-ins with the general public. Oh, and the authorities too. So it could be offending listeners through a hoax about ducks on a hot plate, or discussing a case of alleged police bribery with a caller. You see, then in Malaysia of 1996, this was pretty controversial stuff. It was enough to mean that you'd be taken off the airwaves as well. And in 2013, one of his Facebook posts landed him in more hot soup when reacting to a Kedah State government's guidelines on how to and how not to celebrate Chinese New Year. His post contained some colourful language and, of course, it was deemed insensitive to some Muslims. Now, not many have been so comfortable with the art of calling a spade a spade. The distraction of political correctness would sometimes mean completely missing the crux of the matter, however subtle or blunt Patrick's words would be. So I wondered whether Patrick was just a natural at getting himself into trouble. Here, he recalls his first ever trip overseas.
When I made that trip, was during the height of the drug, you know, trafficking thing.
Sure.
That Malaysia was known as the drug hub of Asia.
And you were conscious of it at the time.
Yeah, and I was conscious. Because before we arrived at New York, we had a stopover in Brussels.
Yeah, that's not
And I was arrested by four Belgian policemen for no reason at all. Because I had an 8-hour layover in Belgian Brussels airport. So what am I going to do, sit in the lounge for 8 hours? So I asked one of the staff, can I go out and just walk around? But they said, yeah, you can, but you'll have to bring your passport, you know. So I said, okay, I'll bring my passport. So I brought the passport, went to immigration, and the guy takes a look at the passport. Oh, you're from Malaysia. I said, yeah. Oh, how is it? I've never been. He was very chatty for an immigration officer.
Immigration guy.
But I noticed that as he was chatting to me about Malaysia, he kept looking over his shoulder because they have these booths, right? He kept, yeah, so you're from Malaysia. Tell me about Malaysia, you know? And after a couple of minutes of that, he said, okay, have a nice day. So I walked past. As soon as I walked past immigration point, these four huge Belgian policemen,
wow,
came up. Follow us, please. I said, huh? Follow us, please. And they took me to a detention room.
So even back then, you were getting in trouble with the authorities.
Yeah. Well,
even back then.
It's not my fault, man. You know, they took me into a detention room, which was full of Asians. So I thought, oh, okay. Because I look Chinese. And I stood there, you know, wondering what to do with my passport in my hand. And then in the far end of the room, I noticed there was one official-looking person standing there looking. And suddenly he pointed at me and waved me to go over to him. So I went in, says, come with me, please. He took me to another office, closed the door. Then he smiled and he said, I don't want you to feel that this is anti-Asian week. But, But, you know, you see all the guys out there, you know, they all come from Hong Kong or somewhere. They all are wearing brand new clothes. They have brand new luggage bags. But they only have one-way tickets and no cash, you know. And, of course, he spoke to me about what the feeling was about travelers from Malaysia with Malaysian passports. Because during that period, quite a number of Malaysians were in the news for being mules.
Even back then, we were making international news for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, we were. So he chatted with me for a while, and then he said, okay, I'm sorry for the inconvenience. No, go.
When, during your time on radio, did that translate to saying, maybe let's try something else creatively? So let's express Patrick Teo in a different manner.
Again, that was not... I mean, I wish I had stories to tell of the way you think that I started, but unfortunately, no. Just like radio, I got into acting quite by chance. Of course, when I was a kid, I watched a lot of movies. I fantasized a lot about the characters, the heroes, the villains. And of course, it did cross my mind when I was little that, you know, I'd like to be a movie actor at some point in my life.
But just as a fleeting thought
thought. And during the times when I was working at Rediffusion, I met people like Fred American, Leslie Dawson, Bosco de Cruz, all these theatre legends of the old days. but I never really made any efforts to say, you know, I'm in this circle of people in acting. I've always wanted to act. I should make use of their knowledge and experience and contact. But I never did.
So again, just another happenstance. You would fumble into it, I guess.
Yeah.
And in fumbling into it, you clearly enjoy yourself.
Yes.
You have a great time. I'm sure the network of people that you're meeting excites the entire profession. But I'm sensing that it stops becoming an avenue to earn another paycheck. It becomes quite enjoyable for you.
Yes, it does. Earning an income is important from my acting jobs. But like you said, I have gone into it quite by chance and found out that, hey, I really enjoy this. I enjoy doing it, you know.
Did you know if you were any good?
I didn't really think about whether I was any good or not.
You just did it.
Did it, and...
Did your friends tell you if you were any good?
I was very lucky, actually, when in the early days of my acting, which was in the 80s, I think, early 80s I started, for many years after the first time I threaded the boards, as they say, I had been receiving very good reviews in the newspapers and magazines and, you know, so...
Right off the bat as well.
Yeah, I assume I was doing a fairly decent job.
You were surprised, though. You weren't saying, well, I thought as much. I thought was as good as...
No, of course I didn't. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. And
because, you know, for all of these things that we've been speaking about, it's happened by accident. There isn't really a formal sense of training or environment in your childhood that, you know, pushes you towards this direction. And in doing so, you actually excel at it. I'm just trying to figure out at which point in time do you go, you know what, this could be really something for me. I mean, did you start realizing the different types of Patrick Teos that you could be because you've done radio, you've done stage, you're looking at possibly, you know what, this could be actually a career?
Like when I first started on the radio, it was a job, and I've been fortunate right up till now in my life that most of the things that I've done, although it followed that kind of sequence, I've been fortunate enough to fall into all these things and eventually find out, hey, I like them, and because I like them, I put more passion, more effort into what I do, and I enjoy it more. So in that sense, I've been very, very lucky. Because I firmly believe that there's a place and time for everybody and everything. Like a lot of people have asked me, Patrick, you've had a very successful run on radio. When you were on radio, you were so popular, you were this, you were that. Do you ever miss wanting to come back on radio and do the stuff that you want to do, get a morning show going? Blah, blah, blah. And my answer has always been no. You know, I've done it during that time, and I was lucky, I was successful, I've enjoyed it. Now I move on to other stuff. I do not want to stay back and try to recreate what I had before, because it's not going to happen. Things change. Like, I mean, on the radio, I admire what you are doing, what Uma's doing, what Caroline's doing. And I think those are things that I will never be able to do. And I don't want to get back on the radio because I'm Patrick Teo. You know, I've been on radio for so long. I want to now come back and do this. I don't ever want to do that.
You're listening to Finding the Funny with my guest, Patrick Teo. Stay tuned for more right here after this, BFM 89.9. This is Finding the Funny on the Evening Edition. I'm Ezra Zaid, and we've been tracking the life and work of actor of stage, TV and film, Patrick Teo. Oh, he's a radio presenter as well. But also, we can now add stand-up comedian to that list too.
Said I was scared about doing this sick and twisted stand-up comedy thing. Everybody said, "Ah, yeah, Patrick, what for? You want to be scared? You've been doing radio for 40 years. What is there to be scared of?" I mean, radio is very, very different from being up here. On radio, I say something. I don't care if you laugh. I'm in the studio with my microphone and my ego. I think it's funny. That's good. Right, Ezra?
Was it a couple of years ago you did your stand-up comedy debut? And I think a lot of people around the country have also listened to you in a comical manner. They've seen you perform maybe caricatures of uncles and all that kind of stuff. Do you enjoy it, or do you have a particular sense of comedy that you haven't brought out to the table yet?
Well, I'm you probably know I'm not a comedian. I could be a comedic actor at most of it. I'm not a comedian like Harith or Douglas, the masters, you know.
But you're a performer. You're a comedic performer. It's a different timing and sensibility,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
What makes you laugh?
What makes me laugh? That's a very good question. I don't know. I don't laugh very often, as my family complains.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That you don't laugh very often? I mean, you seem to be... I mean, you're able to pull out funny moments as and when, I imagine.
Sure. I mean, I can say things that sometimes make people laugh. But...
But you're not quite sure what makes you laugh.
Mm.
Anything that you see or hear currently that makes has a little giggle? Or is there something from yesteryear that still is, you know, the benchmark of what makes you laugh?
I suppose it doesn't really answer your question, what makes Patrick Teo laugh?
Yeah.
But the last time I laughed was a few days ago. Laughed out loud,
right,
which is something I very rarely do, was when I drove down the highway and saw this huge billboard advertising a particular radio station that had this huge picture of a Caucasian man with a big scowl on his face, and the caption on the billboard was "Not for Kids Radio." So I remember the first thought that came into my mind was, "Hey, that's good, man." So I tuned to the station, and the first thing I heard coming from this Not for Kids radio
expecting perhaps some Playboy Hugh Hefner content, maybe.
Maybe. Were two presenters who sounded like they couldn't have been older than 12, you know? I thought, that made me laugh out loud. And, yeah, things like that make me laugh, which I suppose doesn't really answer your question. But
final question. Your career spans about 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had to reset everything in terms of all your accomplishments, but knowing with the knowledge that you're armed with now, what would you like to go on to explore?
What would I go on to explore?
What would you like to do? What really would be something that would sort of tickle your nuts? I mean, figuratively speaking, of course. What would be the adventure of your choice?
The adventure of my choice.
I can spin this any way you want, Patrick.
Actually, I do have an answer for that question. It may sound awfully dull to listeners who believe in the Patrick Teo persona, but knowing what I know, knowing what I've accomplished in 45 years of work, what I want most of all now is time with my family, to provide what many years later, after 1947, I wished that I had from my own parents, which I did not get. So if you say, what is it that I want to do from now on? I want to build the family that I have in my mind, you know. The closeness, the affection, the love, the care.
All those characters you had in your mind as a child to translate that into something tangible.
That's right.
With your family.
Yep.
Did your parents ever see the success that you became? Did they have that chance?
Yeah. Well, I suppose they did, because there was a period in my career life that I was in the media a lot. I mean, I think I was in some page of the Malay Mail or the Straits Times or the Star every other day, or every 3 days there'd be something, sometimes small columns, sometimes big, depending on what I was doing, whether I was roasting ducks or making comments about, you know. So I'm sure they knew what I was doing.
And did they acknowledge it to you?
Well, no. No. I remember my mother, who doesn't speak English at all. The story I want to tell you about my mother was, she's only come to see me, or she's only seen me on stage once.
Once?
Only once. And unfortunately, the play she came to watch me was called Antigone by Jean Anouilh, which is a 2.5-hour, extremely wordy play.
Oh.
And my mother doesn't understand English. So at the end of it, you know, when we were driving home, I said to her, I said, so what did you think of the play? Which is a kind of a stupid, redundant question,
sure,
right? But I said, Mom, what did you think of the play? And her answer to me, up to today when I think about it, it makes me very emotional. I cry sometimes when I think about her answer to me. After 2.5 hours of Antigone, Jean Anouilh, not understanding a single word, she said to me, yeah, it was quite good.
Wow.
So, there you go.
Patrick, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Ezra.
This has been Finding the Funny, and tonight we took a closer look at Patrick Teo. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast at www.bfm.my. Tell us what you think at feedback@bfm.my and tweet us at BFM Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Ezra Zayd, and this is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.